And so we come to the glorious conclusion of our novena. So many of you touch me so deeply in your faithfulness every night. Many of you have come many nights, some of you every night that you could, other obligations standing in the way. And we now celebrate this glorious consummation and with the Bishop of the Diocese. It is such a great joy, Bishop, to have you here, to be led by the shepherd of this flock in this beautiful church, on this beautiful feast. And if you would do me the favor one last time, as we have begun every evening of preaching, if you would just take a moment to pray for me, as I will pray for you, that I may speak the words that the Lord would have me speak, and that your hearts will only hear what He is saying to you. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Saint Anne, we hear in the Gospel the cry of Jesus, who tells his disciples, "Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear." And the Church in her liturgy applies this to Saint Anne. Blessed were her eyes, for they saw the promise of Israel. They saw Israel's finest flower, the Blessed Virgin Mary. And as we meditate on Saint Anne, we are always immediately drawn and longing to see what she saw. And the very striking thing that she saw was Our Lady as a little child. So we have image after image in our holy cards, in our bookmarks, in our chaplets, and even statues in this church that have Saint Anne with little Mary. How our eyes still long to see what the eyes of Saint Anne saw, little Mary, as she played, as she loved, as she prayed, little Mary. The Church draws us to look through the eyes of Saint Anne, and it is a great treasure in this church, in a particular way, to have as a patroness Saint Anne, and to enter into a conversation in our own prayer with Saint Anne, that she can reveal to us, that she can tell us what it was like to see little Mary at play, little Mary praying, little Mary learning to read, reading the Scripture, as we see in all of the images. There are two ways that we can really know something in our hearts. One is by experiencing it ourselves, and that is certainly something held in very high esteem these days. We have a great love of personal experience. And sometimes it even clouds our vision that we forget the second way, that we also can know something deep in our hearts. And that is through loving someone else who has experienced it. Sometimes you may know priests are looked down upon as those who cannot speak about marriage because we are not married, or who cannot speak about children because we do not have children. But that is as silly as a psychologist not being able to treat someone with schizophrenia because he doesn't have it, or treat someone who is bipolar because he's never experienced it. Of course we can, but the way that we experience when it's not our own personal experience is vicariously through love. Love unites two hearts. Love shares experiences from one heart to another. To love someone who is bipolar or schizophrenic is necessary for a good psychologist. And to love married people and to love children is necessary for priests who will counsel them. It is possible to experience through love that which we don't experience personally. And that is the great opportunity we have with Saint Anne, to experience what she experienced through love. If we can really love Saint Anne, then we will have a glimpse to see what her eyes saw, to hear what her ears heard. And they invite us into this meditation on the child, little Mary. One of the highest traditions from the Proto-Evangelium of James says that when little Mary was brought to the temple to be dedicated, that on her own, at 3 years of age, little Mary, she walked up a couple of steps and turned around and danced before the crowd. And the Proto-Evangelium of James records, "And all of the people of Israel loved her from their hearts." This is how she charms our hearts, little Mary. And as she draws us, as St. Anne draws us, into a glimpse of the child, into a meditation on the child, it opens us up into something that is very simple and actually connects with all of our personal experience. All of us have been children, thanks be to God. And in some way, St. Anne invites us and encourages us to remain children. Haven't we sung it over and over again in the Novena song that we have sung every night? Good Anne, thy children cry to thee. We are her children. And the Lord wants us, God who is always our Father in heaven, wants us always to remain his children. And we have a sense of that. I remember my novice master, at the age of 75, I think, his mother died. It's quite old for him to have a mother still living, and yet at age 75, his mother died. His father had died some 20 years before, and he was there, and he's a Hungarian, so it's impossible not to replicate his accent. And he says, "Well, you know, I have been thinking, and I am an orphan now." Father Sebastian, you are 75. And yet there is something always. Our mother will always be our mother. Our father will always be our father, and we will always be children. And thank God that we can always remain children. I know another priest near our house who was the Italian priest at the Italian parish for many, many years, and he was retired, and he was into his 80s, I believe. And his mother was still living with him. She was about 101 and still cooking for him. We are always children of our parents. And my mother, bless her heart, has refused to call me by my religious name. She says, "I was with you when you were born, and I named you Patrick, and you'll always be Patrick to me." That's just how it goes. But the beautiful thing is that the Church teaches us, and we have a special gift in our times, the flowering of the 20th century still carrying over for us into the 21st century, opened the doors. The last doctor of the Church declared, a doctor of the Church is one who teaches the gospel in a way that is universal. It's for everyone, for every Catholic, young and old, priest and religious, married, single, everyone. And a doctor of the Church teaches the gospel in a way that is new. It's not new in the sense that it's the same gospel, but through a new perspective that hasn't been fully explored before. And the most recent doctor of the Church, St. Thérèse of Lisieux, Thérèse of the Child Jesus, who, if you pay attention, has worked her way into just about every church in Christendom, I think. She's in the back of this church, and she's in just about every church you ever go to. Doesn't matter if they're Carmelite or Benedictine or Dominican or Diocesan, St. Anne's or St. Anthony's or anybody else, St. Thérèse is always there. And she has taught us in a beautiful way the way of the child. She understood this. Jesus taught her the way of the child, a way of spiritual childhood that in a certain sense we should never grow up. We should always remain loving children of the Father. We should always remain little children of St. Anne, and thus brothers and sisters of Mary, and also little children of Mary and brothers and sisters of Jesus. That we can have this childlike heart, and that will not delay us in our growth in sanctity, but will raise us like St. Thérèse to the very heights of sanctity. And we have such a host of beautiful childlike saints. One of the marks of little children is that vulnerability, that total honesty. Like Our Lady, how many of us have the courage to climb up a couple of steps in the temple and turn around and do a little dance? How many of us are authentic enough, like Saint Therese when she was a little child, every time she did something wrong, she was driven and started chasing after her parents and saying, I took this cookie from the cookie jar. I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking. And confessed every one of her sins to her parents until they said, it's okay, Therese, it's okay. I know that you hit your sister. It'll work out. How many of us have the courage to be that honest? And so important for us, because as much as we try to be grown up, and God knows that we should, we have responsibilities, He has entrusted us with many things, it's not that we should go around being childish. St. Paul says that I have left behind childish ways. And certainly if we look at little children, they are the surest proof that there is original sin. The terrible twos, as they are known, when the children exert everything as their own and they are truly the center of the universe, that's not the kind of childishness that we should model after, but this honesty and this simplicity, openness, sharing of the heart, and being honest with our mistakes. Sometimes we can be so good at covering everything up that we even fool ourselves and start to think that we are perfect. Well, the truth is that we are falling and failing, tripping and breaking things all the time. And if we can do it like a little child, honest, broken-hearted perhaps, but immediately receiving the consolation of our mother, then it will not drag us down, but it will lift us up. We should be clear that the way of the child is not a way of stupidity. You heard my testimony a couple nights ago. One of the barriers for me in becoming Christian to begin with was my feeling that Christians just couldn't figure anything out. But it's not a way of stupidity. It's a way of honesty. As intelligent as we are, we don't come anything close to God. Although some of those with PhDs may like to think that from time to time. Although science may like to promote it from time to time, science is continually stumbling into what Revelation has already given us. But it's not a way of stupidity. I love very much what Cardinal Meissner, he's the Cardinal Archbishop of Cologne and a longtime friend of Pope Benedict. And when Pope Benedict was elected Pope, Cardinal Meissner was beside himself with joy. And he said, I'm so happy. My friend will be Pope. He has the intellect of a dozen doctors of philosophy and the piety of a schoolboy who just received his first communion. So beautiful. Our Holy Father is not above being childlike. As brilliant as he is, as insightful as he is, great a mind, I don't think he's ever forgotten anything he ever read. And he puts it all together synthetically, magnificently, and yet he has such deep piety. Deep love for Our Lady, deep love for Saint Anne. And when our Holy Father was himself reflecting on littleness, he writes in his autobiography, when he was a child, there was a little saint who was canonized from very near his hometown. There is a shrine to Our Lady in Altötting. It's hard to say unless you're German. And at this shrine, there is also a Franciscan monastery, and importantly, it's the monastery of Saint Anne. And there was a little Capuchin brother who entered there, and he was under great scrutiny in his first years because he wasn't very bright, couldn't read very well, wasn't very impressive in his speech, kind of stumbled over himself. He was a little clumsy, didn't get around very well, and they weren't really sure if he was going to make it after all in religious life. So he was on probation for a while. He wasn't allowed to study because they didn't think that he would make it. And although he wanted to live a simple and pious life, didn't have any academic aspirations anyway, he wanted to live in the cloister and observe the monastic schedule. In order to get him out of their hair, they assigned him to be the porter. It seems to be the vocation of many holy saints. So Saint Conrad was a porter at the monastery of Saint Anne in Altötting in Bavaria, Germany. And he was called day after day. Everybody that came to the monastery, they rang the bell, and the porter immediately had to go. No matter what he was doing, interrupting his prayers, interrupting his meditation, interrupted constantly, sometimes up to 200 times a day. Father can attest, the phone ringing, all priests know the burden of that, the joy of that. If we have a heart like St. Conrad, it is a joy to meet the needs of the people. St. Conrad had a beautiful and childlike heart. He didn't tell anybody anything very profound, but he prayed for them. He loved the poor, and when they came looking for bread, he begged on their behalf to the baker in the monastery and got them only the finest things and a very little ministry. In fact, he was totally overlooked like St. Therese. His own brothers thought, oh, Brother Conrad, he's useless. He doesn't know anything. They ignored him. They cast him aside. They said, he's really a charity case. He's lucky that we even take him in and that we feed him. Well, little Brother Conrad, when he died a very holy death. His death was a little bit like Our Lady's step into the temple. I think he walked up about 3 steps into heaven, and he turned around and he danced. And thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands came to his funeral, and all of the monks thought, how in the world did this happen? Little Brother Conrad has gathered all of the crowds because he had ministered to the poor and the little. He met them and loved them and brought them Jesus. He once said, I can't read very well, but I really don't need a book. He had a crucifix with him all the time. He said, this will always be my book. It teaches me about God's love. Pope Benedict, reflecting on St. Conrad and his littleness, especially at the dawn of the 20th century, when there were so many scientific advancements and this movement into the modern age, and Pope Benedict wondered, by canonizing Brother Conrad, what was the Church saying? That she will never be able to measure up to the great scientific advances, that she will never be on a par with the great intellects of this age, that she will never compete with the greatest technology and with the greatest engineers. And he said, no, the Church does all of those things. And we have in the lives of the saints the most brilliant men that walked and women that walked this earth. And yet the Church also canonizes the little ones, because no matter how high the intellect soars, always we must keep this childlike heart before God our Father, that we can always look up to Him with love, that we can always not take ourselves too seriously, that we can always live in the honesty of humility, that we can accept the lowest and meanest tasks, that we can love the little ones and never despise the poor, because we are surely like them. St. Anne teaches us to love the little ones even as she loved her little Mary. She teaches us to love and be like the little saints. And we also can follow this way of spiritual childhood, this way of littleness, if we follow after the little Mary, follow after her little baby Jesus, follow them into the manger. We know that Our Lady was entrusted into the care of her husband, St. Joseph. We know what good care he took of her. If we can also allow ourselves to be entrusted into his care, we can have the courage also to be little and not be afraid to be carried into the manger, to be led away from the inns that are too busy, too haughty, too many things going on, in order to welcome the little and the poor. We can be taken into the manger where there will be plenty to welcome them there. There's a beautiful story about some of the shepherds in the field when Our Lady and St. Joseph went to the manger and the baby Jesus was born. And the word spread among the shepherds and they began to gather from the countryside and they heard that the new king was born. And of course they didn't ask a question, why is he born in a stable? Their hearts were little and poor. They were happy that he was born among them. And they gathered up their little gifts and they went all together and moving from different places in the countryside. And there was one of them who didn't have anything to give. And he looked around and he was even poorer than the shepherds, a servant of the shepherds. And he had nothing. And so he just hoped. And he followed the shepherds and they presented their firstborn lamb and they presented a little trinket, a family heirloom, something they had kept. They all went one by one before the crib and they knelt down and presented their gift, gave their gift to Our Lady, set it at the feet of the crib, honored Jesus, went along, And finally, at the end, this little one came with nothing. And he walked up and he was scared in his heart because he had nothing to offer. And he looked into the crib and he looked at Our Lady with pleading eyes. And then he showed his empty hands. And Our Lady looked at him, saw his childlike heart, and reached in and took the baby Jesus, placed it in his arms. If we can come to her poor and little, she will give us all of heaven. There is a beautiful story also of Pope John Paul and the way that he understood this insight, the way that he lived in his own way, as magnificent as he was, traveling all over the world, more than all of the previous popes combined, speaking to nations, gathering people, addressing rulers, challenging evil, bringing down the Eastern Bloc, bringing down the evils of communism, a tremendous man with great strength and great faith, and yet he understood very well the holiness of the little ones and the poor. There's a story of a priest who went to Rome with a tour group leading a pilgrimage. And as that priest was going around and to different churches, he saw a beggar there next to one of the churches and he thought, "I recognize him. I think we were ordained together." And he went over to him. I don't remember their names, but he says to him, "Jim? Father Jim, is that you?" And he says, "Oh, get away from me. No, no, that's all in the past. No, no, that's all behind me. That's done. All of that is done." He said, "That is you. It is you, Father Jim. I wonder what happened to you. You left just a couple years after you were ordained." "No, no, I'm not who you think I am. Just leave me alone. I'm just a beggar. I'm just a beggar." And so this priest was really on his heart, and he said, "Well, if there's anything I can do, I want to help you. Just leave me alone." So this priest went along with his tour group and they continued touring, and they had an audience. They had an opportunity to have Mass in the private chapel with the Pope. And after the Mass, Pope John Paul went and greeted them. And when he came to this priest, the priest was just struck in his heart and he says, "And please pray for my classmate, Father Jim. I just saw him. He's a beggar now in Rome." And Pope John Paul said, looked at him and acknowledged and said, "I will pray," and then moved on to the next person. Well, as he was leaving the chapel, Pope John Paul's secretary, Bishop Jivich, went up and said to him, "The Holy Father has requested that you come for dinner." He said, "Really? And that you bring your priest friend." He said, "My what?" "The friend that you told him to pray for." He's like, "Oh, I don't know where that guy is." So he went out in search. He went back to the same church where he had been, hoping against hope that his friend would still be there. And he said, "Oh, sure enough, it's Father Jim." He said, hey, "Jim, we're going to have dinner with the Pope." He said, "We're going to what? We're going to have dinner with the Pope." He goes, "What? I can't. Leave me alone." He goes, "You're getting dressed up. You're my ticket in to see the Pope." So I took him and cleaned him up a little bit and took him to dinner. And he's like, has no idea what's going on. And takes him in and they have dinner, and Pope John Paul, as he did, you know, had 1,000 people with him at dinner and the table was filled. And afterward they went out, and as they were leaving, the Pope gestured and for this priest, for Father Jim, to stay. And the doors closed and his priest friend just waited for him outside. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15, 20 passed by, and then Father Jim came out with some tears in his eyes and a little bit of a glow. And his friend said, What happened in there?" And he said, after he closed the door, he asked me a little bit about who I was and where I was from. I told him I had been ordained and had had problems. I left the priesthood. And then he said to me, "Would you hear my confession?" I said, "Oh, Your Holiness." He said, "I give you faculties. Will you hear my confession?" His friend goes, "Well, surely that didn't take 20 minutes. "No, no, it just took a minute or two. And then I asked him, "Your Holiness, would you hear my confession?" And he reconciled me to the church. And he said to me, now I want you to serve as a priest of Rome. He said, Your Holiness, I'm just a beggar. And Pope John Paul said to him, so am I. I want you to go back and minister to the beggars that you have lived with all these years. Bring them Jesus. You will find him there. Bring him to them. As we conclude this novena, we have all been beggars of St. Anne. And may we never be too proud. May we never be too intellectually astute. May we never be too haughty to remain beggars, to remain poor, to remain little, to delight in all of these mysteries of the faith. And if we are entrusted to St. Joseph, patron of a happy death, if we are children of St. Anne, brothers and sisters of Mary, then may we also, like her, as we have prayed in this final day, longing for heaven, may we also have a happy transition into eternity. May we also walk up a few flights of that stairway to heaven and turn around before all creation and do a little dance with Our Lady.